Enjoy food the way nature intended. Alaska Seafood, wild, natural, and sustainable. For more information, visit wildalaskaseafood.com.
I'm HRN's Executive Director, Katie Mosman-Wadler, jumping in to tell you about this week's episode of Meat and Three, Heritage Radio Network's weekly food roundup. This week, we're introducing you to some amazing women taking a stand.
So often, being sexually harassed feels like a loss of control. And so I wanted to have these very tangible guides to say, here's what you can do.
Others are pushing for more diversity at major food industry events.
I still feel really determined to do, you know, whatever I can to help shift that and in a direction that's not just more diverse, but more equitable.
We also have a report on that summer business staple, the lemonade stand.
The lemonade stand might be the purest form of starting a business. Low overhead, easy to get into, and requires little experience or special equipment.
Don't miss Meat and Three, your weekly 15-minute food news roundup from HRN. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. Search MEAT plus sign THREE. And thanks, as always, for listening.
Welcome to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum, and I love to talk with people about what they do and how it influences their personal food stories. This is a show about people, life, and food. Today's theme, DIY or die. Hear Fred, my guest, laughing in the background. When I was a teenager, there was no internet. I mean, sure, the government had it, and there were bulletin board systems you could dial in with a modem like Matthew Broderick in War Games. There was AOL, CompuServe, a couple of other places, but there wasn't the expectation we have today of being able to text someone or email them and get a reply within a few minutes, or find someone on Facebook or LinkedIn. That ease of connection didn't exist. There was no looking up directions. You had to write them down or use a map. But we still got things done. I come out of the DIY music and art the early 90s. When bands toured, they had to call and write letters to get a gig. In 1992, when Maximum Rock and Roll magazine published Book Your Own Fucking Life, it really changed the game. It was a compendium of people, places, labels, distributors for punk and underground music. When I moved to New York in the late 90s, we started having music and art shows in our loft. It was pretty similar. People would find out about us. Experimental bands from Europe or jazz giants like Arthur Doyle came into our crappy living room and played to a packed house, mostly by word of mouth and through a small email list. They often found us by phone through real-life friends. They'd write us letters and ask if they could play in our living room. The world is far different than that now. Don't get me wrong, I'm not lamenting the technology. It's amazing. I can now keep up with and share ideas with people I've known for years and people I just met through social media, and it all moves us forward. When my wife and I started a business, we did it mostly on our own. Some people call that bootstrapping. I think my experiences in music and art scenes led me to feel that I could figure it out. I wasn't worried that I'd fail, and the barrier to entry in New York was still pretty low, although that's changed a lot in the past 15 years. We built the space ourselves, didn't hire any fancy designers, bought equipment at yard sales off Craigslist, put together the first iteration of the Brooklyn Kitchen in 2006. Shortly thereafter, I heard about a place to get banh mi on Havemeyer. At the time, Havemeyer in South Third was still a pretty heavily barrio-style neighborhood and hadn't really been discovered by young, whiter city dwellers. Here was this place serving banh mi and pho, and it wasn't in Chinatown. It was a DIY space, and the food was awesome. My guest today is Fred Hua, the chef and owner of that restaurant. The first time I walked into Na Toi, he was grating carrots and daikon into a 40-gallon trash can to make do chua, and his mom was toasting bread for sandwiches. I knew right away that he was my kind of business owner. Fast forward a number of years, we're both dads now. Fred has moved on to another unlikely spot with his current restaurant, Namin. It's on a still somewhat desolate stretch of Morgan Avenue in Industrial Greenpoint and serves the best rice bowls you're likely to find just about anywhere. Fermented foods, tempeh, rice, fish, and an array of more than a dozen sauces to add into your bowl along with fresh iced tea, cold beer, and art on the walls make this one of my favorite spots. There's something about the bootstrapping and the grit. The authenticity makes the food better. Just does. Fred grew up in San Jose, not far from where I spent my formative early DIY years in Northern California, and I think there's just something about meeting people with that shared ethos. It's hard to put a finger on it. but I think it's DIY or die. Thanks, Fred, for joining me today on the show.
Thanks for having me.
I'm curious to find out, actually. I've been waiting for this moment to find out. Were you in a band in California?
No, you weren't. Not at all.
I thought maybe we might have crossed paths in that music world.
Well, I think the connections with food, I mean, food and music and art, there's a lot of common ground.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely.
And I use my food as a form of connecting with people, like musicians.
Totally. Absolutely. So, I mean, tell me a little bit about your food and sort of where it comes from. I mean, obviously, it's sort of heavy in Vietnamese tradition.
Yeah. I think a lot of it has to do with Vietnamese tradition and growing up in California. Just like a lot of people now, I think there's a lot more of an awareness of, your food and where it's coming from. And so with that awareness, I try to keep it as healthy as possible. I mean, there's a little bit of the medicine man in me. And I want to make sure people are healthy and happy and coming back for more.
And I think that comes out in your food, actually, very clearly.
Yeah.
I mean, as you were saying that about people wanting to know where their food comes from, it made me think about sort of your two restaurants and sort of how the space exists, and you see the cooks, right? I mean, your first restaurant, I mean, I feel like it was like, just like a table between you and the customer, right? There was nothing to, hide.
No, there was nothing. There's no room to hide.
Yeah.
No, it was... It was the original format, and I just kind of, throughout the years, just rearranged everything according to the menu. There was things that were added. In the very beginning, I wanted just to be very Vietnamese in a way where we specialize in one or two things and, have different options, like vegetarian, seafood option, meat options, and just be a specialist. And yeah. I knew that if I just concentrated on a couple things, it would just get better.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to overwhelm myself and, be in one of those places where they just kind of have the greatest hits of Vietnamese food and
right.
A lot of things come off mediocre. And,
sure. I mean, I think, am I remembering correctly, when you first started, it was just banh mi. Right?
It was just banh mi.
Yeah.
And then summer rolls were added and then later pho. And then when pho came into the picture, it just got crazy.
Yeah.
And then, then I had to get more cooks and, rearrange things to accommodate pho, because pho takes a lot of refrigeration and sure. freezer space.
Yep.
And so, you kind of work with what you got, especially if you're not funded
right.
By investors or...
Yeah, I mean, let's talk a little bit about that. New York is a notoriously difficult city in which to start a business, but it's the place we all come to, right? Where we want to do something, because New York will love you if you put something out there.
And it's a great place for that. Like if you have any kind of create, you want to bring something to the world, and share something, this is it. This is like, the crossroads of the world, and it's great for that.
But, a lot of people do that and they need a lot of backing and bring in designers and they've got a lot of fancy, stuff and all the tables have to match and all the chairs and all this stuff. And, I feel like you and I are not that kind of business person.
No.
So tell me about starting Natoy originally.
Natoy was, just almost like an accident. At the time I was in between jobs and came across a job posting for a Japanese restaurant that's no longer there. It was called Ku, Q-O-O-O. And it was on, it was right next to the Knitting Factory, so on Metropolitan Havermeyer. And there was another restaurant that's no longer open, and it's called Arepa Arepa, who later became good friends of mine. And they were looking, both were looking for chefs. And so I was riding my bike down the street, going to these interviews, and I came across a sign. It was a handwritten sign. It was the kind of sign that I would have written.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it was a sign of desperation. Like, we got to get rid of this space.
And Fred is not joking about that. When you go, if you ever went to Natoy, one of my favorite things was that there were lots of handwritten signs everywhere. And Namin's like that still. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, it's the easiest thing. And if you could, why not? I mean, I think that's a DIY totally. Kind of state of mind. It's like, if I can, then why?
Yep.
What's going to stop me? I should just do it.
Yep.
I mean, And
so you found the space with a handwritten sign.
And we negotiated, and they were just it was an old, sweet Dominican couple, and they were just ready to leave. I think they didn't realize how hard it was to keep a restaurant open. I think they ran for about 2 years. And the whole area was like full of, you know, these really awesome Caribbean restaurants. And, you know, if you don't have your game together, then especially in a very concentrated area like that, then
totally. Used to be a great butcher shop on that block or the next block down.
It still is.
Is it still there?
Yeah.
I haven't been over there in a long time.
Yeah, really, really super fresh. I mean, it kind of bugs me. They don't wear gloves, but, you know.
Yeah, I know.
But, and, you know, the meat's moving so quick.
Yeah.
I mean,
and what I always liked about that place, I've mentioned that place on this show before, because I just have this memory of their big signboard in the back where you could get, like, the weekly grouping, like 1, 2, 3, 4. Mm-hmm. And like it was, you know, 2 chickens and 3 things of ribs and a bunch of steaks and 2 dozen eggs. Like you just basically could buy it for the week and be like, give me a number 4 and I'm good for the week and I'll take it home to my family.
It's beautiful because it has a menu in mind. Yeah. You know, the butchers also cook.
Right.
And that's when you know that, you know, there's a lot more to it than just knives, sharp knives, you know, so. But yeah, we negotiated and they were happy to hand over me the keys and in the beginning I didn't know. I just knew that there was no Vietnamese food in that whole area. This was 2008 and I was like, there's no way I can lose.
Yeah.
If I just started off small and simple and just did it really well and just grow from that. And you know, I think also adds to the DIY state of mind. You know, you kind of let it grow organically instead of like get hung up on this very fixed visual idea of what it should look like.
Sure.
You know, the couch matches the chairs. Yeah, like you go back to what you're saying, everything matchy, you know, so.
Well, and if you set yourself up for this idea where you go in, then if you don't hit that ideal,
it drives you nuts.
Yeah, you're always going to be, you're never going to feel like you're doing it right.
Yeah, and you can't get past that, and all of a sudden becomes a thing. And I think a lot of it also is part of maturing, like accepting for things for what they are.
Yeah.
You know, I think when I was first starting off and I read my first bad Yelp review, it hurt. It was like, whoa. You know, you can't get hung up on it, though.
Right.
It's like, everyone burns a piece of toast or, you know, burns an egg every now and then, even the pros.
Yep.
You just got to move on. And that, you know, I think that reflects on your maturity and your experience. And
well, and I also think, I mean, I think that, you know, I did actually go back. I looked at some Yelp reviews from that. There were some great ones.
There's some really good ones.
There's some really good ones in there.
My family would call me laughing. And I'm like, you read the Yelp reviews.
There's some really good ones, but you know, the thing that I noticed in looking at it, there's also some really, I mean, what I thought was cool is that there were some pictures, like there's a ton of pictures of the food, there's some pictures of your signs, and what that reminded me about, though, is that, you know, it's a very small thing, but like you had a sign up that said, no paper menus. Like the menu's here, it's written on the wall, and if you want to look at it online, it's on our website, right? Because why print menus? You're just going to throw them away,
right? It's a waste, and I think that's where, you know, the California kid in me comes out, you know, with the way I cook and also the way that I run my business. You know, if at the very least, I want to build some sort of consciousness that there's a lot of garbage around. Like, why are we just adding to it? You know, so.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I really appreciate that. I think that some of the Yelp reviews were from people who like were like, oh, I'm going to get Vietnamese. And they expect it to be just like the Thai place that's on every corner or the crappy sushi takeout or whatever. Yeah. Right. Because they're just making these assumptions and they are coming into it with these preconceived notions.
Oh, yeah.
Not coming into it to be like, I'm going to check out this restaurant and experience what it's sending out.
It's funny because those same people, when they go to another country, like say if they went to Vietnam, some which a lot of them that were my regulars that would go there and had these expectations, they would go to Vietnam and tell me they would have an open, you know, you kind of, you're the way you think going into situations, it contradicts itself. You know, I think people that came into my place expected this template of how Vietnamese food is supposed to look and taste. And then, you know, they tell me about the trip and they're like, oh my God, I was blown away. But I know that when they went to Vietnam, it's nothing like it is here.
Yeah.
But the spirit is, you know, like I think it's like Italian food. We could go on and on about that.
Sure.
You know, but it's about the spirit. It's about the approach. It's about the technique. It's about the heart,
yeah.
You know, that you, and I, I try to, just like the same spirit of like street food in Southeast Asia, serve it at ground level. So I'm there, I'm cooking for you, yeah. and most likely I'm ringing you up.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah, and that, I mean, and that's, you know, that is a really valuable piece of knowing where your food comes from. I mean, when you go to the taco truck,
yeah, it's the greatest thing,
right?
I love it.
I mean, you're there and you're watching them make it,
and
you know, and there are great things about fine dining, but like in fine dining,
very
the person
detached.
Who's handing you the food had very little to do with the making of the food because right. that's the way that it's set up, right?
But with fine dining, you're there for different reasons.
Of course.
You know, you're there for the service. I mean,
yeah.
I think that's where places like New York, Vegas, LA, Paris, I mean, they, you know, they really make you feel really important.
Yeah.
And that's the other half of the game.
Right.
You know, it's a huge other half of it that I'm starting to warm up to yeah. a lot more, I think, than I ever have. But you know, service and just making people feel warm and, you know, comfortable.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely. So what happened to Natoy? Ultimately you had to close, not because you wanted to, right?
No, it was, just landlord, pretty typical story. Yeah. I mean, typical these days, sad, but, you know, demolition accident. Mm. It wasn't like a crazy demolition accident. The landlords gutted the space, next to mine. It was an old bodega run by an old Dominican family. It was a really sweet family. And they pretty much priced them out and decided to open a real estate office, their own real estate office. And they, during a demolition accident, they busted a hole through my wall and yeah, and didn't want to take responsibility for it. And then, you know, I got to a point where I was just like, it was a new landlord that bought the building from the old one. The old guy, Gus, he was awesome. He was the kind of guy, old school, you know, you hand over your rent to him in his hand
yep.
with his name on it.
Yep.
You know, it was really my style
yeah.
of landlord. And, but he sold the building. I think he had a bunch of other buildings in the area, but he sold the building to a management group. And I just had a funny vibe about him. I mean, I could have easily just cleaned up the mess and just move on. But I think I felt that it was a start to a very bad relationship.
Right. And better to cut it off.
Yeah. I thought, and financially, it was stupid. It was dumb, really dumb of me. And I think about that all the time. Like if I had just, you know, suck it up and just cleaned up the mess and moved on, you know, I probably financially would have been better. But there's a lot of pride. At the time, I think I was younger and I was in a different state of mind.
Sure.
Things were working for me. It felt like I couldn't make any wrong decisions.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, I mean, you know, they say there are no wrong decisions. There's just the ones you make, right?
Right.
And so, you know, that wasn't a wrong decision at the time, but you could have made a different one, right?
I made a different one. But then, you know, through that, though, there was a lot of other things that spawned from it. So, it's, you know, it actually kind of worked out
yeah.
better in a lot of other ways. But, you know, you learn to accept it. You keep moving.
Yep. Always got to grow.
Yep.
We're going to take a short break and hear from one of our sponsors here at Heritage Radio. We're going to hear from the folks at Alaska Seafood. And if you tune in to episode, I believe it's 109 of Feast Your Ears. Now, I don't even remember all my numbers, but I interviewed Nellie Hand, who is a fisherman woman in Alaska. So check that out, and we'll be right back.
Think about what it takes to swim a coastline longer than the entire eastern seaboard and leap tall waterfalls in a single bound. What does it take to survive 200 feet deep in icy salt water? What would you be made of? Wild Alaska Seafood is made of tight muscle mass, long chain omega-3s, and incredible micronutrients. It matters where your food comes from. Experience the flavor of the fittest in every bite and enjoy food the way nature intended. Alaska Seafood, wild, natural, and sustainable. Ask for Alaska on the menu, grocery store, or smart device. For more information, visit wildalaskaseafood.com.
Welcome back to Feast Your Ears. This is Harry Rosenblum, and joined today in the studio by Fred Hua, the chef at Namin, an owner, used to have Na Toy on Havemeyer, and his dog Lucy is in the studio too. I don't think we're going to interview her today, but she's here. Today is episode 109 of Feast Your Ears. It was episode 108 that I interviewed Nellie Hand, so if you're looking for that one, it is 108. So Fred, before the break, we were talking about Na Toy, your first restaurant here in Brooklyn. So tell me about what you have going on now, food-wise.
I have Nam Minh, which in Vietnamese means our house. Na Toy, if you guys didn't know, means my house. And it's because at the time I was the sole owner. And with this new venture, I have two partners, Jake Klotz and Jeremy Jones, who are amazing. And they, yeah, we just wanted a space that where we could have art shows and, you know, squeeze in some music and just everything, you know, everything that we love and into one space. Yeah, it's been good. I wanted to do something that was different. I think, the years at Na Toy, I made a huge effort to make Vietnamese traditional food, you know, food that was traditional in through my eyes. And I think with this new venture, it's more, you know, exploring, just pushing the boundaries. I think that there's not a lot enough Vietnamese American chefs that are doing that. And I wanted to break those boundaries and push them a little bit.
Sure. I mean, you talk about the healthy thing. I think that, I mean, I feel like some days my Instagram feed is just picture of like rice bowl after rice bowl after rice bowl, you know, like maybe a quinoa thrown in there.
Yeah, no, I mean it's really simple. Really, it's a very, very simple formula: whole grains, whole vegetables, whole foods. You know, just everything very recognizable, as little processing as possible, and the vegetables change every day. I think that you should always change your diet. So whether you're a meat lover or vegan or vegetarian or pescatarian or whatever, you should always change up your diet constantly. It's very important, I think, in so many levels to constantly change those ingredients and variables. And so that's what we do there. And what also makes it super special is the sauce bar.
Yeah.
It's something that I love doing, love making sauces, even when I had Na Toy, but because of the traditional kind of, you know, this obligation I had to make things traditional, there was, you know, it's a very narrow path.
Sure.
So with this one, I just kind of went all out. I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that.
Right. You've got like Green Goddess. But you've got that next to like spicy chili oil.
And then everything in between. So it's like, sauce. Like 10 different types of, you know, variations of Green Goddesses. Yeah. So there was, you know, and if you look at the sauces, it's described by what's in there, so it's pretty straight up. And you know, instead of using those odds and ends of vegetables to make vegetable stock, which is, you know, I feel like the most simplest way of utilizing those things, we made sauces out of it.
Yeah,
you know, carrot sauce, and you know the ends of onions, we caramelize it and make a vinaigrette, you know. And so using every bit of the vegetables but different, you know, angles, I guess you could say. So you would find it in the bowl, you would find it in the patty, the vegetable patty, you would also find in the sauces.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I, you know, the type of food, I mean, I love it. I love what you're doing there. It's a way that I love to eat. You're very fermented, food heavy, which is, you know, very, anyone who is a regular listener to this show knows that I like all about fermented foods all the time.
It's great. And it's a good feeling to take something so simple and add a umami layer to it. You know, you take, you know, some like peppers and you take it to another level.
Yeah.
And it reaches that flavor that you would normally would if you took a step back and let it do its thing.
Yeah. And it definitely, I mean, you know, it definitely was an inspiration to me when I started thinking about this festival that we have coming up at the Brooklyn Kitchen that, you know, you're hoping that you're going to assist me.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll be doing a lot of cooking there. So those of you listening, June 15th, 16th, 17th at the Brooklyn Kitchen, we're throwing a music and art and film festival called the Freak Flag Fest. You can find info about it at freakflag.info. And it is a sort of celebration of that DIY kind of ethos and things that myself and friends and acquaintances and colleagues and collaborators have been involved in New York for the last 20 years. So musicians,
a lot of musicians,
tons of music. Dan Friel, who you may know, was in a band called Parts and Labor for a while. His band Upper Wilds is going to be playing. Mike Watt from the Minutemen will be there. He'll be performing.
And Matt Motel.
Yeah. Playing with Mike. guy named Prince Harvey, who I'm really excited for, who's a Brooklyn native, is going to be playing. And then we're going to have a lot of great film stuff. We're going to have films from Troma. There's going to be called Terror Firmer. Is one of their films we'll be screening. And there's going to be a lot of art installations. And there's going to be food. So the idea was that I want to have all the foods be something fermented, and I want it all to be vegetarian, because I, you know, feel like I want it to be an inclusive kind of food space. And obviously we're not going to set up a whole restaurant. So in a restaurant, you can be inclusive by offering options. We're going to offer options, but I want it all to be vegetarian, because if you eat meat, you can certainly eat vegetarian food, but I don't want to distance anybody from that.
No, absolutely. I mean, and that's the thing with the style of cooking over there. Like, even though vegetables are the star, we have plenty of meat and seafood options, and it's just it's good to take a step back. And vegetables are so underutilized. I feel like, you know, you go to these really nice restaurants, and you know, you see the beautiful the meat and everything, and everything's made. Pasta's made in-house, but, you know, there's not enough vegetables on the plate.
Yeah. And you can do so much with it. I mean, you mentioned sort of making use of everything, right? I mean, the other day I bought a couple of burdock roots at the grocery store, and I like making kanpira gobo.
Oh, yeah.
So I made, you know, I took one of them and I did that, and I had this other one, and I was trying to decide. I was like, all right, well, nobody else in the house really eats it except me, so, like, how much can I possibly eat in a week? So, but then I saw on Pascal Bowder, who's a fermentation writer out in California, posted a picture on Instagram with a recipe. And this is what I meant about my opening about, like, technology and be able to communicate with these people you don't really know, but who you've, like, just met through social media. He posted a recipe, like, as I was thinking about, I mean, the algorithm knows you, right? Like, as I was thinking about, what am I going to do with this burdock? He posted a recipe for fermented burdock that he made. And I was like, oh, perfect. That is exactly what I'm going to do with it. So, you know, trying to take those ideas and put them into the food. I want to serve dosa. I want to possibly make a bunch of tempeh and serve tempeh. You know, interested in serving in rice. I'm going to make pickles. I'm going to do a lot of fermented, you know, a couple of big vats of fermented pickles. And have the food just be, like, simple.
Yeah.
And have it be just there for people to, you know, like, you can get just a plate of pickles if you want pickles. You can get it as a dosa. You can, you know, probably do some kind of curried vegetables, curried sweet potato, maybe curried tempeh. I did a curried tempeh dish the other night at home.
Love curry. And I'll be doing sweets, I guess. I'll do like a, I don't know, like a fruit crepes, I guess. We'll do some fancy chocolate situation, you know. And
And you'll be able to wash it all down with some great beer and cider. Brooklyn Cider House will have some of their stuff. Red Hook Winery. And hopefully Fifth Hammer Beer, Chris Kuzmi, if you're listening. You haven't written back to my email yet, but I'm hoping that we'll have Fifth Hammer Beer. I'm going to hold you to it now that I put it on air for the Freak Flag Fest.
And this is the first annual?
This is the first annual nice. Freak Flag Fest. The hope is to keep it going in one space or another, because it really is a wonderful way to bring these communities together and to, you know, to put it all in one place. And, you know, the fact that it's Father's Day weekend, I don't know if it will be next year or not. It happened to fall that way this year. But, you know, to me, there's a piece of that too, right? Like, we're both dads.
Yeah.
The other, you know, a couple of the other people who help organize it are dads too. I mean, moms as well, but like, you know, but we're parents.
This
now.
Is our
like,
day,
it's very,
though.
It's very different, right? Yeah. I mean, like, it's very different than it was when I was having people play in my loft when I was 22. You know, like, my life is different. Now I can have people play at the Brooklyn Kitchen, right? And yeah. like, instead of like, you know, selling 40s out of my refrigerator, right? We can sell wine.
Yeah. So it's more official.
Yeah. Exactly. So what, and then aside from Namin, you also have another spot where you do some of the food, right?
Yeah. It's kind of become, actually, this year is going to be the year of, the pop-up for me, I think.
Nice. Yeah. Well, you did a supper club thing, right?
I did.
That's
a lot of work. Yeah, in between restaurants, I had some, during the build-out of Namin, I just wanted to explore different aspects of the restaurant, or you're just feeding people, you know? And I thought supper clubs, at the time, it seemed like they were popping up everywhere. It's like, let me give this a shot. And it was my supper club. I had, I'd invite chefs. Aside from me, I would have other chefs come in and host, and I would sell tickets for them, you know, and it was fun. I did it for a year. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And the margins are slim, but it was fun.
Yeah,
and,
you never really reach that, like, level of running a restaurant where you can, like, hit a level of efficiency and utilization and things you don't use today you can use tomorrow kind of thing, right?
No, and things can't get folded back into the business, so it's so if the pickles, like, say if at the restaurant it's easy making pickles because you know you're going to go through it by the end of the week easily,
right. If and not, if you don't sell them today, they'll still be pickled tomorrow, so what's the difference?
Yeah, with supper clubs you have to make it from scratch, and it's for one night, and sometimes we'd have two seatings during, you know, if it was a very popular chef, we would have two seatings a day or night, and we'd sell out, you know, and it was great. But then there's all this stuff left over, and, you know, you have to worry, you know, that, and that's the thing about, I'm starting to find out about doing pop-ups as well and catering, and is that it's funny because when I had a restaurant, I in some ways kind of looked down on this kind of like stuff. I guess it was like, why don't you just sign on to the lease and just commit to the menu?
Sure.
You know? And I mean, what's the big deal? But now it's just doesn't make sense. I mean, the rents are so high.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at, like, how much
do you have to pay barrier, a month? Like, the barrier to entry has gone up.
Yeah. It's really intimidating. So, and also I think it goes back to, like, just wanting to show people other sides of your cooking and doing pop-ups, food trucks, all that stuff, supper clubs. It gives you a chance to do the menu you always wanted to do, right, and to see people eat it and enjoy it or not enjoy it. But yeah, you know, you get to test out your these recipes you've been developing in your mind, if not like every now and then, you know, on the side if you're not too busy. And that's kind of what's become with this new venture that I have. In the beginning, it was more of a partnership. It's now become sort of just a residency. So I've scaled back in the, from 7 days a week. I was there every day for like I, you know, am with all my business ventures so far. It's kind of become my style.
You need a little time with your daughter and
absolutely family time.
Family.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's so much more important to spend time with your daughter than, you know, your family than anything else. I think that's what drives me to go forward these days. You know, with these pop-ups, I get to work on these ideas I've always wanted to try in my restaurant, but, you know, with all the things going on, it's hard. It's hard to squeeze in all these little things, you know? So I've scaled back to 3 days now, or 4 days, but I'm going to go back to 3 days because I've just locked in a couple other pop-up gigs, one of which is in Manhattan that I'm really excited about, and possibly in Bushwick. And every now and then I do a lot of events over at the Well. The last two summers have been crazy. This summer they're just changing things up.
Yeah, sure.
But they'll call me every now and then. It's fun. You know, you get to exercise that creativity.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I've always wanted to make burgers and hot dogs and tacos, but I just didn't want to commit to the menu, you know. So this is a great outlet for that.
Totally.
You know, I could do Vietnamese tacos and, you know. A lot of things going on.
Awesome. The best place for people to keep track of the stuff you have going on is Instagram. Is that Twitter?
I'm not signed on to Twitter. Definitely not Twitter. Instagram, I have it for my restaurant, but I'm planning to, you know, have, it's always every year. It's always on my, you know, it's on my list. And it's just, I can never do it.
Never-ending list.
Yeah, it's just a never-ending list. And I have to set up an Instagram account. But for now, it's Facebook.
Yeah.
Cool. I am at Irv's, and that's at 2122 Beekman Place in Prospect Lefferts Garden. And I'm there Monday to Thursday for dinner, 6 to 11. And Nameen, I'm going to gonna be doing... every last summer we started it, but this summer we're going to definitely push for more for it. But I have more of an outdoor presence. Yeah. So we have this entire corner to ourselves pretty much.
Yeah. And it's still so industrial over there that on the weekend there's nobody around.
No one cares.
You can do whatever you want over there. It's great.
We can do whatever the hell
we want. I mean, it's one of those rare corners. I feel like that's still a little bit Wild West.
Right? I love it. Yeah.
It's great.
Feels like old New York.
Yeah, for sure.
So you could find me at those two places and then
Freak Flag Fest.
Yes, definitely. I'm very much looking forward to that. I've always admired everything you guys did.
Oh, thanks.
I remember even the first day we met, I remember you coming into the kitchen and talking about how you're going to have the school. And I was like, oh, really? And I'm just like peeling ginger, I remember. And you're like, we came out of classes, how to peel ginger.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay. I was like, this sounds great. And sure enough, you did it. And it was beautiful, beautiful. You know, one of the best, by far, in my opinion, the best shopping experiences in all of New York City.
Awesome. Yeah, it was a good run, and as with everything, like, that stuff changes too, right? So, but come on out for Freak Flag Fest because we're gonna have a grand old time.
Yes,
for that for sure. Well, thank you so much, Fred, and thanks, Lucy. You're kind of half asleep on the floor, but that's cool. I guess that's you're a dog. That's your kind of normal state of being.
I'm sorry.
Uh-oh, maybe it's the restaurant calling.
No, it's purveyor.
Oh.
almost.
Well, thanks again, Fred, for coming on the show. I hope everybody will check out Nameen. It's, you know, like I said, like you go there and you eat one of those bowls and you just feel so good.
Yes.
Afterwards. I mean, to me,
very good.
That is one of those amazing things. And like, I know, like, I love eating barbecue.
I love. Yeah, of course.
But I often don't feel good after I eat a big plate of barbecue.
Well, there's always this. Yeah, it's a short amount of time before you start feeling bad. But I feel pretty good even after.
Yeah, I guess you get the endorphin spike, right?
Yeah.
Of like how great it tastes and the excitement and the salt.
Yes, the salt.
Yeah. But I definitely, when I eat one of the bowls, feel great.
Yes.
Afterwards. So hope everybody check that out. Instead of my normal recipe segment kind of at the end today, what I will leave everybody with is the idea that making a grain bowl or a rice bowl really is a formula, and it should include some kind of grain, whether that's quinoa or rice or brown rice or, you know, to be honest, even oatmeal or cornmeal or polenta, something like that. Definitely have to have some fresh vegetables in there. I think you have to have some pickled vegetables in there.
Absolutely.
And then I love to have something in the, I mean, you know, it's hard to get away from the American upbringing of being like, we need protein in there, right? Even if you have something like quinoa, which is high in protein, like So put in, you know, whatever. Put
fried egg.
Put some fish, put some egg, put a piece of meat, put some tempeh, whatever you want. You can put seitan, although I don't personally, seitan's like my least favorite of the like.
See, yeah, it makes me feel bloated, but I love it. Though. It's good stuff.
For sure.
I mean, really good stuff.
And then, you know, and then the really important thing is don't forget the sauce.
No, never.
Whatever that is, whether it's barbecue sauce or if you're using like Japanese bulldog okonomi sauce or if you're using the leftovers from the spicy cucumbers you had, whatever. Put some sauce on it.
I feel like you can't get more American than the sauce. Like you go to a lot of other countries.
Good point.
It's not always there, available.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that it saves the meal. If the meal goes bad, you have the sauce.
Yeah, we do love our condiments here.
Well, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Fred, and thanks everybody for listening. Today was episode 109 of Feast Your Ears. Big thank you to David Tatasciore, who engineers this show every week. Big thank you to the Alaska Seafood for sponsoring the show and sponsoring Heritage Radio. You can find Feast Your Ears as well as lots of other great shows, heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, anywhere on the internet. Just use your Google and you can find us. Please take a moment to like the show wherever you listen to it. You can reach me via email, harry@thebrooklynkitchen.com, and you can follow me on social media @thefoodballer. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.